And welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you on this edition of the program. Steve Vaughn also. And, wow, there's some good news. We want to bring the good news in, as well as visiting the trends of what's going on around the world. America itself seems to be really the area in which there is the most ferocious battle going on for Christian principles, Christian liberties, etc., etc. And sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. It doesn't seem that the trend is towards an increase in the humanist control of our institutions and so forth. But, man, there is a battle going on for the soul of this nation, Steve.
Amen to that. There really is. And it seems like the battle lines are drawn and the polarization is as bad as it ever has been.
Man, and you know, I think it's worthwhile for us to stay in it and to keep bringing a biblical worldview to bear and to disciple the nations in everything Jesus has commanded. And we do that, of course, first and foremost in the church, but we also share through media and other means. But here's the good news. Americans are still giving charitably, and that ratio has been dropping off significantly since the turn of the 20th century, but America is still in the running, more so than any other nation. I was just looking at the figures. America, 1.44% of the GDP. In terms of the percentage giving GDP-wise, America's at 1.44%. Canada comes in close second at 0.77%. Well, not so close, about half. That's not very close. Then after that, UK is at 0.54%. Korea is at 0.5%. And then we go down to Singapore, Netherlands, Australia, and so forth. All Protestant nations. I think that's important because remember, worldviews do matter, and the way in which a nation's been discipled by a certain biblical perspective in which a recognition of the kindness of God and bringing a Savior to us is important, I believe, and that usually results in a charitable people, and we certainly have seen that in Protestant nations, not so much in the Catholic nations. Italy comes in number five, but that's largely because of the Vatican's influence. But generally, it's the Protestant Christian nations that lead the world. You go all the way down past Australia to Germany, Sweden, and then finally Japan. Well, there's Japan showing up in the mix, and then China at 0.03%. That's about 2% of what America gives. That's the 1/50th of what America gives as a percentage of the GDP. That's pretty sad. You know, when you get down into China and Japan, these are some of the most stingy nations in the world. Well, actually, there's quite a few more stingy than these. But, you know, by God's grace, there is more grace in America than any nation in the world today. And that's impressive, Steve.
Yeah, it just seems as though the communists aren't really charitable types of people. Socialist government, they tend to want to control everything and not really give out of kindness or to give hand-ups to anybody else.
Well, yeah, communist China, very generous with other people's money, of course,
yeah.
But not with their own. And that, of course, is the very definition of Marxism and socialism, as we will get into in just a little bit. But it is impressive that America is topping the world in terms of the most generous nation on earth. And there is still something of the roots of a Christian world and life view in America today, thanks to the teaching of the Reformation, the reformers of the 16th century, on into the Puritans and Pilgrims that came to America in the 1600s. And then, of course, the Great Awakening had its influence. And then some of the revivals of the 19th century might have had some influence as well. But thanks be to God, there's something of a Christian heritage in this nation. America is still the most generous nation on earth. As a percentage of the GDP, impressive, my friends. America leading the world. Why? Well, as long as we disciple the nations, every hour that's spent in discipling our children as we sit in the house, as we rise up, as we lie down, every hour we spend in morning and evening worship on a Sunday, when we come in, we hear the Word of God preached, every minute, every second of teaching that is given is worthwhile, because we are discipling the nations, and future generations will be benefited by that 500 years hence. So remember, there's not a second wasted in discipling our children as we sit in the house, as we walk by the way, as we rise up, as we lie down. Same thing applies to the church. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Steve on also. And friends, a lot of good news in terms of the American heritage and the Christian heritage of the Western world. I treat this in Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West and The Rise and Fall of Western Charity. And there's a couple other good things. I think there's still something of a shame, a conscience in America about aborting children with Down syndrome, Steve. That's just bad form. You put that on the front page of the newspaper. You know, we were successful in aborting 97% of children with Down syndrome. I just don't think that flies well.
No, that that's giving you a different reason rather than convenience, I guess, for the abortion. But people still care about maybe the Down syndrome children.
I think so. Yeah, there's still something left. And I treat the Me Too movement also a bit in my book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West. Though there is a degree of hypocrisy, moral hypocrisy that just bleeds out of American liberalism. And yet, I don't think Bill Cosby is going to be a hero anymore. You're not going to find Harvey Weinstein on the front page of People magazine anymore. It just ain't going to happen.
Yeah, and the Cuomo brothers, Andrew and Chris, probably not on the front page of CNN or anything else like that either.
Unless they're all decked out in that striped suit that you get when you get, you know, in trouble with the law. There's still a conscience in this nation, and I think it's something of a common grace that's extended to America. America is still the most generous nation on earth, my friends. Now, it turns out 81% of those who give attend church. And by the way, you'll find this data at philanthropyroundtable.org. It's a huge layout of statistics in terms of American philanthropy at philanthropyroundtable.org. But 81% of those who give attend church. And now we're starting to see a decline of private charity. And we know that. Of course, we're going to see it because of the displacement that has come by way of Marxism, by the communism we've talked about, and that's come into America. And that's, of course, the decline and the fall of Western charity. That's why it's happening. Total charitable offerings provided U.S. Christian churches as a percentage of the gross domestic product declined from 1.1% to 0.7% just between 1987 and 2014. And then also consider that $4 trillion of charity is supposed to come from the government these days, only $300 billion from private charity. That's 93% of your private charity was wiped off the map by government spending. That's happened since 1930. So 93% of private charity wiped off the map by government spending. That all started in 1930. In fact, almost every Western nation, almost every nation in the world displaced whatever private charity there was going to people who are in need. That was almost completely wiped out. In fact, if you dig into the church charitable spending and you take out what goes off to the pastor and to the bodies, bucks, and buildings and all of that, you find that the charity that comes out of the church to the average widow and orphan is a mere percent, and sometimes it's so negligible you can't even see it in the reports, meaning that we've gone down to the point at which almost nothing really goes into charity, real charity. Charitable spending or giving that we talk about typically goes, you know, to the guy up front in the suit, but it doesn't really go to the widow and orphan. Now, historically, according to Gregory and according to John Calvin and Bede and others that have written throughout church history, 25% of church offerings should be going to the poor, to the widow and the orphan, about a quarter. That's decreased from 25% down to roughly 0%. I think there's a can drive Thanksgiving time. You get a can drive, and that would be about a 0.00001% of the church offerings wind up with the poor in any given church, and that's because private charity has been ruined in America since the 1930s, since been ruined almost everywhere. Now, approximately 67% of medical funding is in the hands of the state. Only 7% of overall healthcare spending in the United States came by philanthropic means, and almost nothing was provided by churches. Now, that's quite a shift from, you know, when the hospitals were established by the Catholic Church, the Lutheran churches, the Presbyterian, you know, you got places like Baptist churches, Seventh-day Adventists used to have these hospitals. Like, in fact, I think you still have their names attached to the hospitals, but it's sort of meaningless at this point.
Yeah, and depending also on whether the hospitals are private hospitals or government-owned hospitals will give you a difference in that as well. Government-owned hospitals are also giving away other people's money. You do have, or at least not that long ago, private hospitals took in a number of indigent people that they knew they were going to have to pay for and just to offer them care. But that's going down as well as the government hospitals are forcing new regulations and new things on private hospitals too, through like Obamacare and things like that.
93% charity in America provided by socialist redistribution of wealth, but really it's probably closer to 99.9%. When it comes to real charity, the real support of the poor in our communities, hardly nothing comes from the church diaconate these days, my friends, until, of course, the socialist governments run out of other people's money, until that happens. Well, friends, the hero of the city of man is always the one who, as Jesus puts it, is the Gentile that considers himself a benefactor but lords it over others, takes advantage of the opportunity to control more people by his quote-unquote benevolent spending, and that's the hero of the city of man. Jesus, though, presents a different hero, not like the Caesars, who murdered their millions. Julius Caesar, who wiped out 175,000 citizens before he was able to take control of the empire. That's the hero of the city of man. The hero of the city of man. They murder their millions. Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, Pol Pot, Fidel Castro, these are the heroes of the city of man. The Islamic wars also, the pious terrorist is granted the highest honor and regarded as most heroic. Before he died, the terrorist Osama bin Laden enjoyed a higher popularity rating in Pakistan than the nation's president. And that's the hero in the city of man. But Jesus is different than that. Listen to John 13. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet, to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. After washing his disciples' feet, he was crucified for them, and he cleansed them with his blood. For Jesus, mercy conquers judgment. That's the story of the cross. Therefore, mercy becomes the hero of the story. The one who doesn't deserve mercy receives it from the one who suffers in order to provide the mercy. And the hero is not the one who wins the competition for power, but the one who surrenders position and possession to show love and mercy. And that's the pattern that Jesus gave to us. This is the Christian hero. And so when you get into Christian history, what do you find but Basil of Caesarea, one of the Cappadocian siblings, and he built the first hospital in the West. That was around 369 A.D., and included a complex of dwellings for doctors and nurses. The second hospital appeared in Rome around 390, financed by a Christian woman named Fabiola. She was an acquaintance of Jerome. These were the first known charitable hospitals in the world. Also, in the bleak pagan world of the Greeks, blind boys were sentenced to a life in the galley ships, and blind girls were remanded into the dens of prostitution. But Jesus comes into this world, turns on the lights, and Christians open the first institution for the blind in Jerusalem in AD 630. Then the early 9th century, Charlemagne issued a capitulary requiring every monastery and cathedral in his dominion to maintain a hospital. By the turn of the millennium, there were 500 hospitals in Europe, staffed by 10 to 20 monks, nuns, or canons. The progress did not stop there. Over the next 500 years, an additional 1,300 hospitals were built in towns and cities across England. So this is the history of Christianity. This is not what the Marxists did. This is what the Christians did. This isn't what the pagan Greeks and Romans did. This is what the Christians did. This wasn't what the Islamic people did. Actually, the Islamic people, they requested that Christians came down into Iran and Iraq and the area down in Persia. And it was Christians who helped to build the first hospitals in the Muslim territory as well.
That's pretty amazing that Muslims would even look to the Christians for anything. Yeah, so one of the things I read in a book by Rabbi Daniel Lappin is that a lot of times we don't have a good understanding of what charity actually is. It's not giving a handout, so I would actually not define what the government does as charitable. It is actually giving a hand up, because you look through, like, the law, the biblical law, it wasn't that you would that if your enemy's donkey had fallen under its weight, it wasn't up to you by yourself to get him back up. It was that we helped each other. So if you were, like, driving down the street and you saw somebody with a flat tire and you went up to help them and the keys get thrown out of the car onto the ground and he says, hey, when you're done, let me know, that's not charity. He's not expecting charity. I think you have every right to leave. But it would be everybody would get out and help each other. So you're helping somebody else get through some of life's hardships. It's not that you're taking over and doing it for them. Even with the hospitals, people are expected to at least follow certain protocols and guidelines in order to help themselves.
And I think there's a distinction in charity between putting people on the dole, so to speak, and helping them through a crisis. That's a very important distinction. The whole idea of being on the dole is counter to anything of a Christian approach. And you think about the third year tithe in the Old Testament, it was just an occasional tithe in which, you know, there was a sum of money, but it didn't put anybody on the perpetual dole. Also on the edges of the field, you know, the local poor had the responsibility to glean themselves. It wasn't as if it was all there for them. They had to do some work to get it. So you find that throughout Scripture. You also find that charity was typically localized. It was a charity that was accountable. There was something of a relationship between the person who was offering something and the person receiving it. And these sorts of things, of course, don't happen when you have this bureaucratized socialist system, which ultimately destroys charity. And that's the point of my book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, and the chapter, The Rise and Fall of Western Charity. It's one of those beautiful stories in all of human history, what Jesus did. And we need to read about it, and we need to share it with others. And then we need to see that one of the most despicable things ever done in human history is what the Marxists did with social justice and with welfare and with the redistribution of wealth. We need to see the demonic influence of Marxism upon the entire world. Started with a welfare champion, Unitarian adherent, Dorothea Dix. She is remembered for her criticism of private charity and her push for state funding of mental asylums in Massachusetts, New Jersey, and North Carolina. Her efforts to secure federal funding of public welfare met with a veto from President Franklin Pierce in 1854. She was the prototype of modern socialists. unwilling to give up her own lifetime or money for the needy and helpless in society after the pattern of Macrina and others. Here was the new socialist, utopian, revolutionary, idealistic, pestiferous, not very charitable, yet very generous with other people's money. Then you get on to Jane Addams, known for her lesbian tendencies and co-founder of the American Civil Liberties Union, particularly interested in public education, child labor, building codes. And so this is precisely what we get with her. She introduces some of these socialist programs, and she's remembered as the one who brought socialism into America. That's Jane Addams. The hard work of the 19th century socialists paid off in the 20th century as government welfare programs burgeoned into every Western nation. Christian family, church charity, privatized care for the poor neighbors and relatives pretty much disappeared. Central governments took over education, health care, the care of the elderly, food distribution, housing for the poor. This was the most significant social shift in 1700 years. Between 1880 and 2020, this new religion of modern liberalitas is the form of socialism that displaced the Christian religion. Not surprisingly, modern socialism experienced its first major burst at the turn of the 20th century in Germany. It wasn't America, it was Germany that got the first burst of socialism. It came by Karl Marx, Adolf Hitler, the 48ers, the National Socialists. All of this came out of Germany. Germany being the seedbed of all kinds of pestiferous, horrible, horrible things. For 5,900 years, great monarchs and empires seldom handled more than 3 to 10% of the nation's income. In 1850, the great state of Prussia was still only controlling 4.9% of its people's income, but the power of the state radically increased in Germany to benefit this new welfare program called Solidaritas in Germany. In 1883, the Bismarck government introduced the health insurance of workers law, followed up with the old age and invalidity insurance law of 1889. The National Insurance Code integrated the nation's social welfare program into a single unit in 1911. Then came the Youth Welfare Act in 1922 and various unemployment programs in 1923. So that's the destruction of charity in Germany. That's the arrival of socialism in Germany. That's how it happened. Socialism arrived here in America a little later, 1912. Presidential elections marked the turning point towards the ancient pagan concept of liberalitas, which is the pagan concept of handouts versus a charitable, relational, localized approach to charity. Both Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson advocated equally socialistic agendas in the 1912 presidential election, with Roosevelt's agenda leaning a little more so to the left. He wanted a minimum wage law, more powerful federal regulatory agencies, social welfare programs, etc. Woodrow Wilson won the election, however, and found a way to redistribute more wealth through the new graduated income tax brought by the 60th Amendment. Following on President Wilson's heels, Franklin D. Roosevelt responded to the Great Depression in the 1930s by adding a host of federal welfare programs and the Social Security system. And then later, Lyndon B. Johnson's Great Society programs added 60% of the U.S. federal budget, and so on it goes. Well, that's where it is, my friends. The world turned to socialism after the year 1900. 10%, the tithe, had always proved sufficient to provide for charity in the past, but 20th century leaders now chose to drive their economies deep into debt to provide public social welfare to those who would not or could not work. And so between 1900 and the present, central governments increased their welfare spending from zero to between 25 and 30% of their respective national incomes. All right, so that's the way it worked, and it all happened within the last 70 to 80 years. It's all happened in the last 70 to 80 years. The destruction of private charity and the arrival of social justice, social welfare programs, the Marxist approach to destroy nations and to destroy the poor and to destroy charity, all of that came about in the last 70 years. The fruit of Marxist charity, not pretty. The corruption of morals, the corruption of marriage, fatherhood, family life, procreation, politics, medicine, economy, thoroughgoing in Western nations, free handouts offered to those in broken family situations served as an incentive to further immorality, irresponsibility, and more social disintegration. European illegitimacy rates increased from 5% to 60%. The U.S. rates increased from 6% to 40%. Among the African immigrant ethnic group, for example, the illegitimacy rate increased from 22% in 1960 to 77% in 2017. The abortion rate for this group was three times the national average. Throughout the socialist revolutions, repeatedly liberal Christian groups would trot out a kludged theological justification for the agenda. The liberal view was Christian apostasy. What follower of Christ would mistake the atoning, substitutionary, voluntary sacrifice of Christ for the social gospel? Who would believe that the liberation theology of the Roman Catholics or the social justice movement of liberal Protestants was anything more than Marxism? It wasn't God's love. And it certainly was not in accord with God's law. Compulsive charity was a farcical monstrosity, a despicable counterfeit of the love of God. These heresies and other twisted caricatures of Christian doctrine remained well into the 21st century. Okay, so that's the rise and fall of Western charity, my friends. And you can read about an epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, a new book that we just published. And I would encourage you to understand the trends and the things that have happened. The positive things, yes. The things that Jesus brought into the world. And you can contrast that with the things that Karl Marx brought into the world. What Jesus brought in, inevitably, it has been attacked and very much, to a very significant extent, destroyed by Karl Marx and the humanists of the last 100 years. Read the story in Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, available at our website, generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Steve Vaughn, inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.